Yesterday was actually another amazing, 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 very, very, very strong day on the markets. But I'm not talking about the Bitcoin markets. I'm talking about the Nasdaq. And Bitcoin is, of course, again, just moving sideways. And to be honest, I think I've realized why there is such a big disconnect between Bitcoin and the traditional markets. It hasn't been natural that Bitcoin is actually moving, or not moving at all, and staying in this range for now what is over 170 days, while the Nasdaq is having pretty much the run of its lives. And we saw this run continue after the rate cuts last week. So you see yesterday, the Nasdaq was up 2.53%. So today I'm going to show you what's actually going on behind the scenes, why this market isn't actually moving. And then I think once we look at that, we can decide exactly, or we'll realize exactly when the market will actually start moving again. Then also we're going to be dealing with one of the, or talking to one of the most, I would say, best, most successful, most innovative, most promising, probably one of the best buyers in crypto right now. So Friday, let's go, guys. I don't know if you saw this tweet of mine, but this is probably my way of voicing my frustration. And I said, you know, for over 170 days, I've made daily content every single day about Bitcoin moving from the 59,000 mark to the 70,000 mark. I don't know if you can honestly understand how tough it is to make every day exciting and filled with energy when the Bitcoin price just moves sideways and sideways and sideways. It was fun for the first 155 days. But from day 155 to 170 has been an absolute ball ache. Anyway, today is going to be no different. We're going to bring you crypto love and crypto wisdom. But today I actually have got real alpha for you. So if you're here, smash the like button. Let's get going. If you're not already subscribed, just subscribe to the channel. Remember, before we get into it, I want to remind you today is a Friday. It is a banter. It's a very special banter today. Our Friday banters are brought to you by NordVPN. Only idiots are surfing or in crypto without actual VPNs. Why? Because you are exposing your IP address. You cannot expose your IP address to hackers. You cannot expose your IP address to governments. What I have found out as well is that Nord not only masks your IP address, so governments and hackers don't know where you're surfing from. And by the way, for those people who think that they're surfing anonymously, you do know that every DeFi protocol, every exchange knows exactly what your IP address every time you ping them. Now, for $3 a month, you can protect yourself. And you can have four months extra, and you can get your money back. Now, get this. Nord not only masks your IP address, but because some systems are so sophisticated that they can pick up when you are on a VPN, what Nord actually does is it has a double VPN option. So I want to actually show you something which is very, very, very unique to Nord. And this is why I really think that Nord is the one that I would be looking at. So I'm going to show you what the Nord VPN looks like. And I don't think that many of the other VPNs actually have this. But if you look here, you have a double VPN option. So I'm not going to connect because it'll cut us off. But if you click that, you get a double VPN, which means they can't even know that you're on a VPN because there's a VPN between the VPN and you and the VPN. Guys, we are talking about $3 a month to protect your crypto stash. I think it's the best $3 you can ever spend. In fact, I think there's two places that you should be really spending money. One is you should be spending money on a VPN, and one is you should be spending money on a wallet. Okay, now, really, those are like, if you're going to be in crypto, spend money on a VPN so that no one knows who you are and you're surfing anonymously. And spend money on a wallet. And if you are going to get a wallet, really, I think the best place to get a wallet is to get the new Ledgers. I want to quickly just show you why I like the new Ledger wallet so much. I actually got some. They're arriving at the office today. I'll do some giveaways on these Ledger wallets. But I have to just show you why I'm so excited about the Ledger wallets. So the Ledger wallets are designed by the founder or the creator of the iPod, and so the iPhone or the iPod, and so you can see that they look the same, and it's no longer one of those ugly memory sticks. And this is the way to keep your crypto safe. So there's a link below. Take a NordVPN, take a Ledger, be safe on your crypto journey, and then let's get into the road and actually start making life changing money. All right, with that said, let's get into the meat and potatoes of the show. So I said to you guys, it's felt very, very, very unnatural to me that the Nasdaq keeps flying flying like crazy, and Bitcoin just keeps moving sideways. It just look at this move in the Nasdaq from the bottom to the top. Now, bear in mind, I mean, this is NASDAQ. The NASDAQ's up 10%. Bitcoin has been in the same range for 170 days. The reality is that a move like this is unnatural. And especially after the inflation numbers came in and the rate cuts are almost a sure thing, it doesn't make sense that that Bitcoin isn't moving. And so there must be something unnatural going on. And I think I've put the pieces of the puzzle together. I think what's happening is we have a big seller in the market. And I don't know if you know, if you've been following, but in the last couple of days, we've had a lot of transactions from the US Marshall Services to Coinbase. And we've always said that maybe this is a custodian contract. But it looks to me like there's more and more mounting evidence that the US government is actually selling Silk Road Bitcoin. Joey Crook posted something about this yesterday. He actually posted a transaction, which shows that they may be selling. And then, and you can see this is 20,000 Bitcoin that are sitting in the account. And then Scott Johnson says, yes, US Marshall Services is almost certainly selling Bitcoin. Joey is right, at least presently. USMS has been sending Bitcoin to a custodial address required by the terms of servicing of the agreement. Given the agreement requires USMS to remain completely segregated, whenever a transfer is ultimately made to Coinbase Prime, you can be sure they're already sold or are imminently selling. Official confirmation will definitely come upon the Department of Justice Asset Forfeiture Program FY 2024 report, if not earlier. I also don't think it's a coincidence this began in earnest following the Trump speech. Remember, Trump announced in Nashville that he was going to be holding the Bitcoin. Sadly, also foreseeable based on the Department of Justice OIG audit report. So basically, it feels like the US government may be selling and there's an unnatural seller in the market. Because if there wasn't an unnatural seller in the market, then the price would actually be moving up. And it feels to me like we actually are in the midst of an unnatural seller. So what does this mean? It means that for now, the price of Bitcoin is moving sideways unnaturally while there is artificial sell pressure, so to speak. It also means that the coins are moving from the wrong hands to the right hands, right? So like, you don't want coins in the US government's hands unless Trump's in power and he's vowed not to sell them. You want coins in holders' hands, not clouds. I always call these like bad hands, like clouds. You know it's going to rain, right? And the problem is you just want the rain to finish so that the skies can clear up. That's how I see these holders of these unnatural holders of coins, governments and GBTC trust and whatever else. What will eventually happen is they will run out of coins to sell, Mt. Gox, governments, etc. And then there's going to be the catch-up trade, the mother of all catch-up trades. And I think that what we're going to look out for now is we're going to start preparing ourselves for the mother of all catch-up trades, which is pretty much what happens after this unnatural selling happens. So how do you prepare yourself for the mother of all catch-up trades? Well, for one, just be patient. Don't get shaken out of the market because you're getting bored and whatever else. Remember that this is actually a normal part of the cycle. And Benjamin Cowen actually said it here. He said, as a reminder, in 2019, also a year that the Fed rate cuts began, Bitcoin diverged from the SPX as well. So many people acting like this stuff is unprecedented, hard to believe, but it actually happened exactly the same. The same thing happened exactly before. So let's keep perspective here. Let's remember that at some point the divergence will end and then Bitcoin will run and it'll run much faster than the S&P. And that's when you've got to be holding. So again, if you're smart, you're either holding or you're accumulating, you're buying good quality alts. And when I say good quality alts, you can choose whether you want to be buying the alts without the big token releases, the high FTV releases, or you can choose to buy the alts with the high FTVs because they have been artificially battered. The good news is that the tokens that we've been speaking about, specifically I spoke about Phantom the other day, you know that for those people who were in front runners, I called it in front runners. I think you guys all know that is. For those who don't know, front runners is our Discord group. It's an internal Discord group. You can join front runners. There is a link somewhere in the description. Go and check it out. If you join before the end of next week, you can get a month, and if you're unhappy in a month, I'll give you your money back. Simple as that. But go and sign up now and make sure you get in within the next week. So I'm glad to see that those alts, Phantom, Injective, another one that we called in Frontrunners, Rune, another one that we've been calling, I'm glad that those are the ones that are actually doing well. Now, that these guys all have a lot in common. For one, these tokens are all almost fully vested. In other words, there's no vesting schedule. There's no high FDV, low token float component of these tokens. For two, these are all technologically very sound and very, very, very proven protocols. And that is kind of like the investment thesis that I've got now. Because I'm waiting for this catch-up trade, and because I want to manage my risk return, I'm going for safe protocols in terms of technology, and safe protocols in terms of adoption, and safe protocols in terms of FDV versus tokens in circulation. So there's three on this list. Phantom, Injective, Rune. I think I'd be buying all of these. Maybe Near Protocol is another one of those. But there's one in particular that I want to speak about today. And the one that I want to speak about today is a protocol that I think technologically is the best blockchain piece of technology that exists in the world. Maybe not in terms of token price responsiveness, maybe not in terms of VC spending, but definitely the best piece of technology in this space at the moment. It's a piece of technology that we invested in a long time ago, in 2017. In fact, we were one of the first investors into this protocol. The protocol is Arweave. And even though today Arweave has a, let's quickly just have a look at the price of Arweave. Even though today Arweave is at $21.32 and below the $50 high that it's had this cycle, it is one of the only tokens that has done very, very, very well this year. That's much above its all-time high. What I thought today is we've been early investors in Arweave. It's been one of the first protocol. We were one of the first investors. And the protocol that we invested in is very different from what actually exists today. In fact, they've come a hell of a long way and they've exceeded every one of my expectations. So today, instead of actually focusing on a lot of altcoins, I actually thought I'd get the founder of Arweave, who's a good friend of mine, Sam. He's from New York, and we'll catch up with Sam. And he'll tell us exactly what's happening in the world of Arweave. Sam, how are you, my friend?
Doing well. How are you?
Good. It's been a long time since I remember writing the first check. I think it was the Arweave, was it the ICO or the first raise? It was before the ICO. When you guys were building a platform or a chain or protocol that was going to store things forever with one payment. I guess that was the big idea.
That's still what we do.
But it feels like a lot's changed. So it feels like initially when we set out on this journey, we were just going to be a storage protocol where people made one payment forever, and that was funded by a very smart endowment type model. Tell us where you're at and how things have pivoted.
Yeah, so we don't see it as so much of a pivot as a realization of the capabilities that technology made possible. Basically, it turns out that, well...
Sorry, can you just go on? Just go on, but go on.
Okay. So we see it more as a realization of the latent abilities of that base technology, which is just permanent on-chain storage at arbitrary scale, and applications downstream of that are pretty plentiful. It turns out that really computation, when you think about it in a decentralized environment, is in fact actually just storage and replication of logs of state transitions or inputs that cause state transitions. And so recently we built a system called AO the Computer. And basically what AO does is it is a decentralized supercomputer where all of the logs of inputs and interactions to each of the processes it has, and it can have any number of those in parallel running inside the system, are stored on Arweave. And yeah, that is essentially a realization of the dream of a world computer. But it's made possible by this base layer, which is we need to be able to replicate information around the world in a decentralized way without that information ever being forgotten. And we're pretty excited today. We're actually launching a temporary data storage system built on top of that same technology called Arfleet. The idea of Arfleet is essentially, instead of storing all of the data on chain, we can use AO, which itself is built on top of Arweave, to store or create a proof challenge response system on chain that allows you to reference off chain data. And this is useful because permanent data storage is expensive necessarily. Like, that endowment contribution has to be of reasonable size. It's not super expensive. It's like fluctuates, but you know, in the range of a couple of dozen dollars to store a gigabyte permanently with 20 replicas for like the endowment targets 200 years minimum. storage term. So it's very long term.
Let's go back just a little bit. So when you built Arweave and you built the base layer, which was for permanent storage, at that time, did you know that you were going to launch the parallel computer, the AO computer, or at the when you originally built it, what was the original vision in mind? And I want to try and get from there to the point where you thought, okay, hold on, wait, this is the application of it.
Yeah, totally. So I think there was one sort of pivot point in the vision. When we first started building Arweave, we thought, well, what are blockchains good at? Blockchains are good at replicating information around the world in so many places it can't be censored or forgotten. That is essentially the thing that makes Bitcoin work, right? But it's just very small amounts of information, and that information just happens to be money, essentially. Movements of money. Transactions, yeah. So we thought, well, why don't we scale that up so that you can fit arbitrary amounts of data inside and then replicate history so that there is a censorship-resistant, open and transparent ledger of all of the important things that have happened in the world. There was a pivot point just 6 months after we launched the network, which was about, we launched 6 years ago, where we realized, well, actually, as soon as you have that data being available in people's browsers, you have the seed of a decentralized web. And yeah, that we end up calling the permaweb. And I think everything that we're building now is really just layers of the stack of the permaweb. So you want to build decentralized web applications, which are, you know, web applications with the properties of blockchain. So they're immutable after they launch. They're user interfaces you can look at and play with, but you have the same guarantees that you would normally have in association with a blockchain transaction or a service. But maybe you need computation, right? You need back-end compute. Well, it turns out that's just logs of computation on Arweave too. So we built AO. And then you need, you know, temporary off-chain storage for stuff that you don't quite care about so much, but is still important to have around for a time. Well, that's Arfleet. And really, our ecosystem has been building over that time a huge amount of infrastructure for an entirely parallel web to the existing one that has blockchain principles at its core.
There was a time in between, let's say, the mainnet launch of Arweave and then the whole batch of announcements that came around AO Computer and everything else, where we didn't hear much from Arweave. So the question, I think where I'm going with this was that because you guys were heads down building the future, or was that because you were strategizing as to, or confused, not confused, but almost like playing and finding the right use case for the technology? Because at the time, I remember as an outsider, not an outsider, as an investor, but someone who wasn't on the inside, thinking maybe the model of paying a lot of money upfront for long-term storage forever isn't a great model. Maybe it didn't prove itself. That was the perception in the market. And then you guys went quiet, and then you came back and you said, hold on, we're actually launching this amazing supercomputer, which can process very fast parallel transactions all at once, and you did beautiful graphics, and everyone went, wow, is this a rebirth? And I'm trying to get into, like, what happened in that mid-stage?
Yeah, so the history of Arweave, and to some extent the history of our team as well, is that we've seen two bear markets so far. And the first one, you know, we spent a lot of time trying to communicate in public, and frankly, no one wanted to listen because, you know, people were depressed. But we did in the background also spend a lot of time making Arweave scale arbitrarily, right? So after Arweave 1.0, it had good scalability, but it didn't literally arbitrarily scale. And I mean, like, the only limit is 2 to the power 256 bytes per transaction, which is quite a lot. That's more than
enough.
You know,
it's more than enough. Yeah.
Yeah, it's more than enough. It's more than the number of atoms in the universe. But when it came time for the 2020 to 2022 cycle, people found use for Arweave in NFT storage. And one of the critical things is, well, they wanted to store a lot of data that would have flooded the network previously. But we spent a lot of that time, fortunately, in the first bear market, focused on making technology work great. And then when it was time for the second bear market, we were like, well, you know, nobody cares about communications right now. We'll try and communicate what we're doing and why it's useful long term, but ultimately there's just not much point. Instead, what we should do is we should focus on the core technology that in the bull markets, there's so many distractions and good distractions like community growth, you know, spending a lot of time building the ecosystem infrastructure, if you will, in the sense of like the social relations, the new projects that come on board and start building and this type of stuff. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of that, and we won't get anything done in the bull market on the tech side. So let's spend this time, you know, now, while everyone else is distracted, putting in place the core technical infrastructure that we need. So we've kind of seen enough now to understand how the game works. And yeah, and then...
Where do you think right now, if you were to meet someone who you haven't seen for a long time, doesn't know what you've been working on, has a very vague understanding of blockchain, and he says to you, Sam, hey, how's it going? Haven't seen you for a long time. What have you built? What is? How would you define Arweave where it is today?
Yeah, we've been building a permanent decentralized web, basically a web where you have the rights you would expect from a blockchain, right? So it's censorship resistant. You don't have to trust a centralized third party. And Arweave now goes not just from the base layer of storage, but all the way up the stack. Like it's a full stack for a decentralized internet. So and also a world computer on top of that.
I mean, for people who are watching this and going, but hold on, Ethereum's also a decentralized internet and Solana's also a decentralized internet. What would you say is like the big difference?
No, it's not. Ethereum is... I like Ethereum a lot. I took part in the ICO. I still hold some of those tokens still. But it's like a decentralized world calculator, right? Like it can do an absolutely tiny amount of computation. Yeah, and you know, Solana is actually a very well-engineered machine, but it's focusing on a niche, which is global shared memory machine, which means that all of the memory that is split between the contracts is in one shared place, right? So you lock it and you interact with it and someone else can't use it. It's kind of like a, instead of a decentralized calculator, it's more like a decentralized server, like one of them to be specific. And the more compute you add to these networks, maybe the more validation of the correctness of the machine you get, but you don't get like more scalability. And so what AO is focused on is instead, well, that like global shared memory system just doesn't work. You can't make that scale. Solana is a pretty good job at sort of optimizing in that niche. But you don't even need global shared memory. Like it's not a useful feature for end users that much. Instead, what you do is what has always happened in computer science. Like when we want to scale something up, we make it based on message passing. So we have many different machines and they pass messages between each other. Just like this conversation we're having right now is the result of message passing. My machine is sending a message to yours one way or another. And so, yeah, we just embrace that as the compute model. And what you get out the end is the ability to run arbitrary amounts of computation inside a decentralized verifiable computer. It's literally a world computer. You also have a storage layer underneath. And so it starts to look like a web or a cyberspace, if you want.
So the one part of it is the storage layer, and the other part of it is the multiple message sending layer, the multiple computation layer. Let's look at the top part of it, which is the multiple computation layer. Who else that you know is playing in the space or making good strides in the space of multiple computation, making blockchains faster using multiple computation systems?
Yeah, so there's some movement towards parallelization of virtual machines. But there was a reason when we launched AO, we called it a hyper-parallel computer. It wasn't just marketing. We mean explicitly a different form of parallelism. So most of those projects, if not all, are built on the idea that you'll have global shared memory, but you'll have many threads running in parallel, well, some number, typically capped at about 8 or so. And so that's how you get from the, you know, world calculator of Ethereum to the world server that's kind of closer to Solana. Like that is parallel under the hood. But AO is like a totally different beast. So where they reach typically like 8 threads, or I don't think there's anything with more than 8 out there. AO, the testnet, is running with 110,000 parallel processes, and each of those can do the computation of the maximum of a centralized CPU thread. So people are running things like fully decentralized LLMs on top of it, like an LLM inside a smart contract, which is just, this is why I said, like, Ethereum is not a world computer. It's not remotely on the roadmap to achieve something like that.
So I'm not going to drag you down into a discussion of price, because this is not about the price of Arweave, but I think price is a measure of how many people understand how amazing what you guys have built is. And I think the question that I have is, I think I understand what you guys have built. The way that you explain what you guys have built, there's nothing that's even remotely close that gives you the ability to do so much in a decentralized fashion on a blockchain. Why? What do you think is the reason why the market hasn't caught on to this and said, this is probably the most sophisticated piece of technology in blockchain at the moment? There's probably nothing else that comes really close to it. I know it because I'm in blockchain every day. You know it because you've just told us. What is it, a communication problem? Is it because there's not enough stuff being built so people aren't understanding? Is it because this is not a VC project where tokens are vesting and all the tokens are pretty much vested and out there? What do you think is the, why aren't people clicking?
Well, I think they are increasingly, like, to speak about prices for just a moment, I'm pretty sure that Arweave is one of three or four very, very, very few Web3 projects whose token price is higher now than it was at the beginning of the year.
Yes, and for sure.
By some substantial margin. But I think that speaks more to people discovering Arweave and the fact that it actually has serious fundamentals behind it. So if we look at a lot of those, like, let's call them VC chains, right?
Yes.
They spend all of their attention and focus building hype and community only really in the sense of speculators, if we're being honest. And we just don't see the world that way. We really care about what we are building. We want it to be genuinely a decentralized web. And that's also why I think that we were able to build AO, and remarkably, no one had built anything similar before. Like, when we first came up with the design for it, my first question was, why has someone not done this? There must be something I'm missing. And then we went and spoke to all the smartest people we knew, and it's like, hey, why doesn't this work? Tell me the problem here. And there was a bit of, like, cargo cultism, right? Like, global shared memory was what ETH did, and ETH worked, so everything must be global shared memory. But another part that I think is likely to be a bigger contributor is that people are just distracted. They're just hyping up the token all day, and they're not building good technology. And the way that I see the state of the industry is that has eroded the progress that we could have made and the speed of which we could have made it. Ironically, bringing better allocation of that capital down inside the projects themselves. Like, so many projects with hundreds of millions of dollars in the treasury and virtually nothing to speak of in terms of actual real usable technology. So
how do you get, so you've got that. There's a lot of projects that I've seen building on Arweave. And in fact, we've seen a whole new generation of projects building on Arweave using AO, using the AO computer, et cetera, et cetera. How do you compete with the big VC chains in terms of attracting developers to build on the platform? So I do see a lot more, I'll be honest. I do see, I see games launching. I see a lot of stuff that is actually happening. But how do you compete with chains that have got huge treasuries, hundreds of millions of dollars of bursaries and grants, and you name it, they've got it. How do you, as a chain that has raised its money a long time ago, fully vested all its tokens, doesn't have a massive ETH Foundation, Solana Foundation, with tons and tons and tons of tokens in the treasury, how do you compete with a chain like that to get share of developer attention and to get developers experimenting on the chain?
Well, actually, I think developer attention is something Arweave has done pretty well relatively to just wider crypto, you know, community engagement. Like, Arweave now has 7.8 billion, something like that, transactions stored inside. it goes at 350 transactions per second, and all of that is real users uploading stuff. That makes Arweave at this point something like 15%, the permaweb, 15% of the indexed web by Google. Like, it's an enormous data set. It's actually one of the most well-used protocols in crypto. And like, if you don't believe me, go speak to any developer you know and see if they've used it. There's a very high likelihood that they have. In terms of like competing with the VC chains, with larger treasuries, what I've learned along the way is that like money is definitely not the problem for building this technology. Like, we're very lucky to live and work in an industry where it's not like rockets, you know. Those are seriously capital intensive in order to build. Actually, building a good protocol, if you look at the history of protocols, you know, even before crypto, the good ones were built by three or four people. If they're actually one or two people in a lot of cases. But in crypto, you know, ETH, the V1, which is essentially what everyone is using a derivation of today with relatively few changes, that was made by like three or four developers. It's not a question of capital. And to bring it back to your starting point about when you guys got involved in the project for the first time, we raised 400K when Filecoin raised 400 million in the same month in August 2017. And I remember at the time thinking, God, they've got so much money. They must, you know, they're going to go so much further, faster. And they were like focused on temporary storage. And right, just at that point, we were focused just on permanent storage. So there's a differentiation. But I remember thinking that's a big deal. And now, like, the price of Filecoin is exactly the same as what it was back in 2017, which is kind of hilarious. And look at the technology. Like, no one is actually using it. It's just a big empty data center filled with random data that they are paying miners by inflating away the value of investors to produce. It's really all absurd. Like, it just doesn't strike me that there's that high a correlation between the treasury and the actual output that people have. If anything, certainly for early stage projects, high treasury value more often goes to like low output than high output. And the other side can be too extreme as well. You want to be in like a sweet spot where you have enough money, but definitely too much can lower output.
And in terms of money that you guys are using to power Arweave, and when I say Arweave, I mean all the projects that are, because I mean, I get the protocols obviously running, but all the projects and the things that are happening around it, is it built and funded by you guys? Is it built and funded by VCs? Is it self-built and funded by really smart devs that just want to write code and are writing code? Where is this ecosystem coming from? Because there is an ecosystem. I'm watching it grow every single day. I'm seeing new projects every single day. But why I ask is because when I speak to my VC friends and I say, guys, let me tap into the VC network because I want to invest in projects that are building on Arweave, no one sends me a bunch of pitch decks. Whereas if I do the same thing on a Solana, AVAX, or whatever, there's 1,000 pitch decks floating around there that are in multiple VC offices. So I'm trying to work out, if I'm an investor in Arweave and I love the technology and I want to invest in projects that are building on the ecosystem, what's the entry point?
Yeah, that's super interesting. I think a lot of the projects in the ecosystem, and it really is an ecosystem, like you said, how is it funded? Well, the answer is there's like three or four different organizations that are all taking a pretty big slice of the development at this point. So they, you know, there's like Community Labs, for example, raised a decent chunk, about 30 million in the last bull market cycle, and also acquired some R, and now they have a very decent treasury. They fund a bunch of stuff. And so there's kind of a really decentralized group underneath it. But to how do you get involved in projects? I think one of the really exciting trends we've seen this year is that projects building on AO the computer are trying to replicate AO's token model itself, which is very, very
innovative.
Exciting. Yeah. Basically, the idea is that you just have a fair launch of the token. You have zero to, in the case of AO, and it looks like other projects downstream are likely to adopt the same model. You go zero to 100% with a four-year halving, 100% being 21 million, just like Bitcoin. And then you craft the mechanism such that you are maximizing some economic output that is useful. And so in the case of AO, this is just, well, just bridge assets into the ecosystem and then you earn ownership of it. So if you move your financial residency to AO, you start earning ownership of the protocol. And that's pretty powerful. And instead of funding it from having like a pre-mine and selling to VCs and then having all of the downstream problems that we've seen 100,000 times there, have it be completely open access at the top of the funnel, and then fund instead by bridging yield-bearing assets, things like Steth, into the ecosystem. And then you can split the yield amongst the developers that are building it. In the case of AO, there's about six different organizations that are like core team equivalents, essentially. Just like Arweave, we want to make sure it's actually decentralized properly. It's not just a company with one you know, with one strategy. We really like to adopt, you know, multiple differing viewpoints and let people all push for adoption of it. And so a lot of the projects in the ecosystem are doing the same thing downstream. For example, Orbit, a decentralized Oracle system on top of AO. I don't think they've talked about this publicly yet, but I don't think they would mind me mentioning it. Yeah, in the next month or two, you'll be able to deposit tokens into Orbit, yield-bearing tokens of one form or another. And then you can take part in the economic security of the Oracle. And at the same time, you earn the Orbit token mined from zero. And on the backside, then you have this funding of the creation of the protocol and development of the ecosystem around it itself without actually having to pay for it directly. And so instead of having this, like the team is dumping on me, the VCs are dumping on me, all of that type of stuff, actually the funding just comes from a different route, which is, well, you have capital, like you are engaging in an economic system that requires capital. Why shouldn't that capital be productive? Then you can use that productivity to fund the protocol while you use it and earn ownership of the protocol itself.
Yeah, I mean, I know, look, I know we staked, I think ETH or ST ETH on AO, so or on or using the Arweave thing. So I think we're very much playing that game. In terms of applications, protocols, things that are being built that really excite you right now on the platform, what, like, you must be, because you probably got a real bird's eye view on everything. And so what excites you? Like, what are you looking at and going, you know, when this works, this may bring X amount of users, or this may bring a new layer of security or something. What are the what's the stuff that really excites you in terms of what's being built? Where you think it's going to step change the network?
Yeah, well, I think our fleet, which we're sort of announcing the launch event today when you're watching this, it will be a huge deal. It adds temporary storage to the PERM web stack, which opens up, you know, the storage capabilities of the network, like totally widely. There's really no data that is not addressable market space for Arweave at that point. And we've seen a lot of temporary data storage systems over the years, and they tend to basically have hyperinflationary token supplies that just whittle away the value of people holding that token in order to massively over-subsidize the demand side. Sorry, the supply side.
The supply side, of the market.
Yeah, the provision of hard disks, essentially. Well, there is like limited demand. And actually, from what we've seen, you know, those protocols haven't even got a product that is usable enough that people will just want to come along and use it. So when we launch Arfleet, there is no new token. You just use Arweave tokens. Actually, you can use like AO tokens of any form on top of it eventually, but the default will be wrapped Arweave inside AO. When we launch the system, we're doing so with a core like user on day one, a massive user, actually. It's Odyssey, this Web3 video sharing platform, which was another thing we did in the bear market.
Acquired
to decentralize. We did that in the bear market while everyone was asleep, and it wasn't, you know, it made good economic sense. And now we're bringing Odyssey, which has 6-7 million monthly active users, actually 7.5 or something like that, I think, who are super attached to the platform, and bringing them over to the PERM web, making them core users of the system by showing what it can do for them. Like Odyssey was always about having a decentralized, trustless video sharing platform, but the technology it was built on previously just couldn't achieve that, couldn't make that possible. And subsequently, there's a very, very large data set of real demand on user, like on day one of Arfleet. By the time the launch event happens, I think we will have the first data from Odyssey uploaded into it. And when you add all of that up, that's like actually a pretty big proportion of the Web3 data market just in one user. And then downstream of that, we think there's a lot of other very basic low-hanging fruit, people that have already integrated Arweave for metadata storage, for example, or posts, but they don't use Arweave for very large video files, this type of thing. There's an existing user base that can now just more or less flick a switch and say, oh, okay, cool, all that stuff that, you know, all that integration work that I've already done, I just add this other one call. Now I can make this temporary storage of this other data I was having to integrate this whole other service to support.
Initially, when I heard about it, I thought, is this an opportunistic thing? But now the more you talk about it, the more I realize it's actually a game changer. It's like, it really does change the whole game. I actually want to pivot the discussion just for the last couple of minutes. And I think we've both been here for a long time. I mean, we met in 16 or 17. I don't remember the dates. I know we invested around 17. So we've been here for 7 years plus. We've seen a lot. We've seen bull markets, bear markets. We've seen meme coins. We've seen NFTs. We've seen trading. As someone who's a builder in the industry, looking around you and kind of like looking at what we've achieved as an industry in the last couple of years, like, what are your thoughts? Like, have we done really well? I mean, on the one hand, you've got Bitcoin and you've got ETFs, and and on the other hand, I mean, we're still trading meme coins. We're still trading, the biggest application we have today, or the biggest use case we have today of crypto, is trading meme coins. How do you look at it from a builder in the industry point of view?
I think it's massively capital inefficient.
Okay.
But we have come I started watching Bitcoin very early, 2010-ish, before it was worth a dollar. And then, I thought it was magic internet money at that point. It was just a curiosity. But then a couple of years later, I started really digging into it and mining Bitcoin. And I remember having a conversation with someone who became our head of product, our first head of product. And we were trying to work out what would be required for this to take on gold or the dollar. And it seemed completely impossible. and here we are, 12 years later, and it's playing out at pretty much the maximal speed that we could have ever hoped that it would. Ethereum has made possible decentralized trading of assets without third-party trust. These are all pretty basic things now to us. we watch crypto Twitter each day, and we get very waiting for things to happen. Come on, make things happen. But if you zoom out and look at the wide picture of it, actually what the industry's achieved is pretty astonishing. However, I do think that the amount of capital that has gone into it proportionate to the outputs is not what we would hope for. You'd have told me...
Is that normal? Yeah. Is that normal for an industry to, at this stage, the industry seem to be spending more than the output? Because, we are building building blocks, and building blocks, as you know, happen from experimentation, and experimentation is, in the most part, unsuccessful until it's successful, right?
I think that, yes, we have been building blocks for a while. I think that could have been done more efficiently. And I think it comes back to the difference perhaps between crypto and other industries. Every major technology over the course of at least history that I'm aware of, back 300, 400 years, every single one creates bubbles.
Yes.
Right? You get excitement in the market that outpaces the actual product development. And then there is a sort of realization of the fact that things aren't where people hoped they would be, a demoralization and all the rest, the classic adoption curve. That is normal. I think what's different with crypto is that it's hyper-financialized. And so the product, somewhere along the line, for a lot of these projects that raise huge, huge treasuries, the product became the token. And that's why all of their, focus and time went into building that product, if you will, which is really number changing value, rather than the core utility of the systems. And so we've just been trying the whole way along to be it's a very, very long to build what we want to. But
my counter argument would be that, you know, the reason why so much capital's come in here is because number go up and we've managed to build systems which allow for number to go up. And that's why this industry has attracted so much capital. I think, you know, every time that I want to be fooled that people are here for the decentralization, I remind myself that they're here because it's probably the quickest way that they can make money and trade the money and cash out the money and get the liquidity of the money. And that's the I think that's the magic system that we've built, which attracts more capital.
It definitely attracts capital. And I think that it also works in the positive way and negative way. I think it just increases volatility, essentially. That's what we're seeing. It's like the normal technology adoption cycle, but with increased volatility. Because the assets underneath, or rather the products underneath, work or don't work based on the value of those numbers. And so they tend to work extremely well when things are going well. There's a self-reinforcing cycle that happens. You know, something like Luna, for example, worked really well during the period where everything was going up, and then it worked excessively badly when it was going down. But the product, right, was financial in nature, and so number going up attracted more people to a financial product. It's just that financial product was not sound underneath. And yeah, and that obviously increased volatility on the way down as well. So it's pretty typical for the technology cycle, but it's like a mixture of dot-com plus financialization in the 80s and 90s, as far as I can tell. Mix those two things together, it's kind of like crypto.
Let me ask you, I mean, probably the billion dollar question, which is like, how far are we away from people outside of crypto just using crypto products, blockchain products, without knowing or caring that it's blockchain products and actually having a good time doing it? Like,
so that's what we're focused on with Odyssey. We think decentralized social media is a very obvious place to start. It's a way of bringing the properties of blockchain that are important to people, right? The censorship resistance, transparency, trustlessness, to an audience that actually really needs that in their daily lives as well as in their financial lives. I think the financial lives part is stuck in a hard corner because essentially everything that that trustlessness in finance makes possible, we created regulatory systems in the normal world to deal with the fact that you needed trust. And now trying to backport the system that is inherently trustless into a framework that is based on the expectation that there is always a third party that is trusted doesn't work. It's very difficult. And it looks like regulatory changes are coming on that front, and people are adopting crypto anyway. Like, it's happening just at a slower pace than it could have otherwise done. But I think on the like decentralized website, building web services and applications that people actually use in their daily lives and that bring value to them from the properties of blockchain, hopefully not so far at this point. Like, we had this, you know, launch event for Odyssey, which we called PermWeb 1.0. Like, we really see this as now the core fundamental technologies are in place for the whole stack to be decentralized. And we see Odyssey, the 7 million monthly active users, as a very good seed of that decentralized social composable data ecosystem. And then AO, the computer running inside it, makes all of that programmable. And you can, you know, trade rights, for example, in the content. So if you're a content creator, right, why do you want to upload to YouTube, who might pay you a check once every, you know, once a month, but what happens in that check, like how much you get, is completely arbitrary. I was speaking to a creator who was telling me about how in December, their revenue, their views were the same, engagement was the same, their revenue dropped 80%, just at random. No one at YouTube will tell them anything.
Well, we live this every day. You don't have to tell us. There's no accountability. I'll be honest. I mean, as a content creator, number one, there's no accountability from YouTube. Number two, I'll tell you the truth. I wake up every single morning with anxiety that I'll switch my channel on and my channel for some reason won't be there. Tell you another thing, that on that day, if and when that day ever happens, God forbid, but if it, there's no one to talk to, Sam. It's not like it's not like I have an account manager who's very excited about me being on the platform. Like, on that day, everything that we've built here, which is over a million users, can disappear. And to be honest, that's, you ask me, like, what's my biggest fear, my biggest stress is centralized players being able to remove me off their centralized platform for no real reason. Not because I'm doing porn. The porn I do on Pornhub, and that's not a problem. But the stuff that I do here, I can be removed in a heartbeat, and that's the problem.
Yeah, totally. We get the same response from every creator. And so what the Pornhub is offering is it says, look, your right to speak is yours. You own the key, you own the voice. And then on top of that, the content that you upload, you can upload it with rights that you set. There's this thing we built again in the bear market called the Universal Data License. This was one of those things where like people didn't understand why we cared so much about it at the time. We built it because we just acquired Odyssey and we were trying to work out how to scale up a decentralized social media ecosystem to like tens of millions and hundreds of millions of users. This was an important component. We just couldn't announce it yet, or the Odyssey part. But yeah, we have this Universal Data License on Arweave that allows you to say, okay, well, RAN owns the rights. And, you know, if you want to view it, you could pay this much. Or if you want to use it in a commercial setting, that much. Or for AI training, that much. And that's outside of the platform. So instead of the platform just telling you how the world is and you accepting it or not, and almost everyone does accept it, you set the terms. And then if the app wants to show your content, then they have to abide by those terms. And then actually, instead of just saying, well, RAN owns the content, how about RAN's token inside the content itself is where the rights originate from.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can go and trade that content. So you could have Patreon, but instead of it just being donations, your users become the owners of the content you produce. And then
it changes the game.
Yeah. And then
that's one dApp. That's what I mean. What you're talking about is, I mean, actually, what you're talking about now is one feature inside one dApp that is currently being integrated or built onto AO, which is built on top of Arweave. So it's like the last 10 minutes have been a discussion around one feature around one app and how that one little feature can change the whole world, specifically for content creators, which is something that I do. Sam, listen, first of all, it's been great having you back here. I encourage you to come back here more often. Congratulations on all the progress that you guys have made, and also for keeping the blinkers on whilst everybody was worrying about price and bear market. You guys just carried on building and kept our bag safe and kept our investment safe. And of course, if you ever need a platform, Banter's here for you, my friend.
Amazing. And if you ever need a platform, come to the PermaWeb.
I will for sure, my friend. And to you guys, if you ever need a platform, just stay and subscribe to Crypto Banter on YouTube while it's obviously still here. I will not see you guys again on Sunday. We're not doing a meme show this Sunday. Are we doing a meme show on Sunday? I don't think we're doing a meme show on Sunday. So there's no meme coin show this Sunday. But if anything happens on the markets, I'll be there. Otherwise, I will see you guys again on Monday. Until then, trade well, my friends.